everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind, WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Positively minded. Positively minded is where do you focus? You know, you get worried about the economy, you get worried about the election, you get worried. Who blames you? On the other hand, when you get worried, people, when stress starts to hit them, they turn against each other very often. And they turn against each other in funny, accusatory ways. Why aren't you taking care of me? Why aren't you being less spendthrift? Why aren't you being more spendthrift? Why aren't you saving money? Why aren't you blaming the other people because you feel powerless in your life? And you don't know what to do, and you don't know it, but you bring this air of negativity with you wherever you go, and it infuses, and it tends to attach to the people you love the most. So the people you care to the most, you give the most complaining to, and that alienates them somewhat because they feel somewhat responsible for you, and distance is created. This is a time when really it is very important to remember that it is your relationships that are more important. That's more important than your 401k. It's what you got. If you have anything in the bank, the one thing you have is the love that you have wherever you have it. And if that love is a friendship, then it's a friendship. And if it's a relationship, it's a relationship. If it's a child, it's a child. But wherever you want, if you want to do anything that's going to be your safety in this world and your feeling better in this world, it's going to be in your relationships. So how do you get relationships that work, and how do you make relationships work, and where are the problems? I speak to many people who, as I watch them try to talk to each other, they can't do it. They just can't seem to get their point across. I was listening to some people today and some people yesterday who were talking to each other, and they were talking cross purposes, you know, like, oh, I love you very much today, but tomorrow I hope you take out the garbage. Oh, I feel very good towards you, but yesterday you said, you know, and they can't seem to stay in the moment. It seems like there is something about presence and affection that's almost uncomfortable to people. One wonders why they avoid it. Or maybe it's as my guest, David Wolf, who will be on the air with us very shortly, says, it's about learning. It's about learning what you put out there, and it's about learning about yourself. My guest, the book is Relationships That Work, The Power of Conscious Living by David Wolf. And conscious living, you know what that is, don't you? It's what women do and men don't do. It's what generally is always considered the less sensitive side of things. David, hi. Welcome to WBAI.
Thank you, Armand.
David, let's talk about relationships that work. What's missing here? Is there such a way of, is it about learning the skills of communication? Is that what all it takes? Is it, can you do that? Can you have the skills of communication without having the personal insight? And is that possible?
Well, that won't be complete. It's said the quality of our life, the quality of our communication is the quality of our life. Communication is so important. Communication with others, even how we communicate with ourselves. Like if I'm telling myself I'm not lovable, then, you know, things go from the subtle platform to the gross platform, so I'm going to track that in my life. If I'm telling myself, communicating with myself, I deserve abundance to flow in my life, then I'm going to create that. So communication is so essential. And in the seminars I conduct and Relationships That Work, the book you just mentioned, we do focus a lot on communication strategies.
Communication with self. Now, there's a lot of people who have a sense of entitlement who say, I am entitled to have good fortune in my life, but they don't want to do anything to get it. Is it enough to just say, I know I am entitled, I am going to put a positive thing out there, and I'm going to say it, and I'm going to put it on my mirror. I am entitled to wealth. And you say, that'll attract it, like the law of attraction. That's all you got to do, right? It's all you got to do is say, I'm entitled to good things, and it's going to come to you.
Well, there's effort. There's action involved. Like, let's say if I say, yes, I want wealth. I want $1 million. I want that. Thinking about it, and I lay in bed all day. Well, if I really want something, my actions are going to reflect that. And so in terms of deeply fulfilling relationships, yes, it's about intention, and there's also an effort. I won't call it a work, because work can have a negative connotation. So we describe a system called transformative communication, and it's not just communication techniques. It's actually an approach to self-realization. It's actually an approach to personal development. And when we're aligned with that spiritual realization, personal development, then naturally we're going to bring that to enrich our relationships.
All right, so let me get this straight. If you have your own connection with your own spiritual transformative self, that is number one, you say. So before you try to learn about communication, get in touch with yourself, you're saying, right?
Yes.
That's what you're saying. So you're saying, this is not a communication book. I'm not going to teach you tricks of communication if you don't want to look at yourself.
That's right. That's right.
And good man. You know, David, I was afraid you're going to be one of those people who wanted to sell a book and you were beginning to sound like our politicians. Oh, no, you could buy this book. It'll teach you about communication, even if you're not willing to look at yourself. This is a good book you could throw at your lover when you get angry at them, you know, because it's nice and it's small and it sails nicely through the air. No, it won't work if you don't look at yourself. And by looking at yourself, that means what? That means, number one, stop blaming everybody?
Yes, yes. Accountability, responsibility, that's a key principle for spiritual development. It's a key principle for fulfilling relationships. And to not blame someone, that doesn't mean that we won't speak up if there's something wrong. It doesn't mean we don't get angry. In fact, it might mean we take responsibility to express ourselves more than we have been when we don't like something. But it is a stance, it's an approach to life of I take full 100% responsibility for my experience in relationship and my experience in life and my contribution to relationship. Meaning, like, even let's say if you act in some way that irks me, that annoys me, okay, you're acting the way you're acting. I am 100% responsible for how I respond to it. I can respond to it with a sense of humor. I can respond to it with violence. I can respond to it with high-level communication. I'm 100% responsible for my experience and my contribution.
So, therefore, we're looking at it from the perspective of whatever I create, whatever is here, I most probably, with some exception, of course, I've created. And then whatever I perpetuate that I don't like in my life, I'm an active part of it. And I have to look at my side first before I could look at the other guy's side.
Yes, that in my counseling, therapy, coaching, and my seminars, I take the stance that a responsible perspective towards life is the most effective perspective in order to create the life we want.
Okay, so how do you do it?
Okay, well, I mean, first, like you used the term to look at ourselves, and so I would ask, let's say you or anyone listening, let's say imagine that you're looking at a photograph of yourself when you were 5 years old. Now, when you look at that photograph, do you say, who is that stranger? No, you say, that's me, Armand, when I was 5 years old. Now, we know from chemistry that there's not one cell that's in your body now that was in that five-year-old body. So that indicates that even though the body has completely changed, there's some constant identity that I call David or you call Armand. And so self-realization, personal development, that this is the core, this identity that's not dependent on the body, on physical changes.
Now, wait a minute, David. Let me understand this. I'm born with a certain DNA structure.
Yeah.
I die with that structure. If I have a baby, my baby gets that DNA structure.
Okay.
So that's been with me right from the beginning, and that's got to be passed on from cell to cell. So maybe not the cells are the same, but the DNA is the same.
Okay, and are you asserting that your essential identity is that DNA structure?
Almost.
Okay.
Essential identity, meaning my propensities, the tendencies I have, the amount of aggression I have, those are all part of that original, that's kind of what I'm born with.
Okay.
And then I'm saying from there, you know, we develop our character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Are you saying you believe that or you believe different than that? It's okay.
Okay
if you think I'm stupid, it's all right.
Okay, well, my perspective that I ask people to at least sort of to try on, like a set of clothes, is that, okay, as we indicated, we can talk about structure, but the chemistry is completely changed. And so still there's some constant identity. And that's what I refer to when I say spiritual, that we are a spiritual spark inside a changing material body. And the intrinsic qualities of the spiritual spark are that we're inherently radiant, warm, giving, loving, powerful, firm, decisive, all of those qualities that we're endeavoring for in our lives. And so we're covered by different material coverings. And so the process of transformation, the process of psychological development, is to sort of peel off the layers and come to that core essential identity and let that shine forth. And where we start in doing that is communication. That through effective communication, we create a sacred space in ourselves and in our relationships. And in that sacred space, we can really shine the light of awareness on ourselves and on each other and develop and get to understand ourselves and each other better. And that's really, in that way, we support each other in our personal growth, which is an essential purpose in life.
Well, you know, many of our listeners here have heard enough, and anybody who's a fan of the positive mind, they have held that mirror up and looked quite deeply, more so than the average person. So let's talk about the communication skills or concept that you're talking about. Let's get real direct. We're talking about some common roadblocks to effective communication.
Yes.
Can you tell me what those are?
Okay. Well, especially like if someone's approaching us with an emotionally charged situation. Let's say it's a situation in the workplace and someone says, like, I can't believe the way he ran that meeting. He didn't listen to anything I had to say. I'm just going to quit this place. Now, let's say if we were to give advice, well, you should talk to him. Or let's say if we were to criticize the person, well, when's the last time you got your reports on time? Or even if we were to praise the person, oh, well, you're one of the best employees in this place. You're so smart. That things like advising, warning, even praising, psychoanalyzing. Now, all of these types of communication, they have their healthy place in good human communication. But as an initial response to someone with an emotionally charged situation, they can be roadblocks. Because, especially if we're angry, it's human nature. We want to be understood. It's real satisfying to be understood. And sometimes I compare understanding to like life air. Like if we get the wind knocked out of us, all I want is air. If you offer me a pile of money or my favorite meal, it won't matter. I just want air. Similarly, sometimes if I'm like emotionally charged with whatever, guilt, shame, fear, anger, then I just want to be understood. And even if you give me an astute analysis or good advice or even praise, it's not going to be satisfying. And so a great way to show that we understand is to mirror back what we understood someone said and the emotion behind it. In the scenario I described, it might be something like, I can see you're really angry and you feel so insulted because he completely ignored you at the meeting. And that understanding can create a connection. It can build trust.
Well, there's a little hazard in that because part of that is psychoanalyzing. I can see that you're really angry and upset. And then if I say to you, because he did that in the meeting, that's quite an assumption because you may be angry and upset because you know, your wife yelled at you when you left the house. Mm-hmm. And you may be taking it out here. So by attributing it, aren't you in some way pointing to a cause and doing an analysis? Wouldn't it be more efficient to say to somebody, I could see that you're really angry and upset, and be there for the person first before you analyze and give them the cause?
Well, I appreciate what you just said, because the core of it is the reflection of the emotion and not so much the content. And I'm in agreement with you that if we also reflect the content because he didn't pay attention to you at the meeting, we might be risking the roadblock of psychoanalysis.
And we might be pointing something in a direction that makes it more solid. You know, whereas the person might be saying, I'm having a very upset day today. Mm-hmm. And then they point at something. If you wind up discussing that thing, then it becomes about that thing. Whereas if you do the thing that you recommend, which is to isolate the emotionality of it and to say to the person, I can fully see and understand that you're upset right now. And you don't have to go either way with it, you know?
Yes, I can see you're upset. I can see you're angry. You're frustrated.
What if that hostility is coming towards you? You think it's the same thing? Somebody's coming at you and yelling at you. You know, you, it's you. You were at the meeting with me and you didn't stand up for me and I'm really mad at you because you didn't stand up for me. What do you say? Same
yes.
thing, maybe?
Armand, the principle is the same, and to apply it is more challenging if the hostility, resentment, bitterness is directed towards us. It's more challenging because our nature is to become defensive or like this. And so the key here, especially if it's directed towards us, is to show understanding. And I make a distinction between understanding and agreement. Now, sometimes maybe someone's really angry with us, and I actually agree with them. I think it's justified. Sometimes someone might be real angry with me, and I really think they're distorting things, and their point isn't valid. But I'm suspending my disagreement to show that I understand. There's a saying, people don't care what you know till they know that you care. Now, this person, I might not agree with the person, and I might have some opinions I want him to understand from me. But before just saying, well, here's what I think, if I'm showing that I'm understanding what he's saying and the emotion behind it and why he's angry at me and why he's hostile, then he feels 100% understood by me, then when I'm going to express, he's going to be more likely to be receptive to what I have to say.
So you're saying part of it is recognizing the emotion, and then there's a secondary part, which is being able to feed back to a person almost exactly what they say to you. I see that you feel betrayed by me because of so-and-so, because I didn't speak up at the meeting, and that's what you're saying. I see you're saying you were betrayed by me. So giving them an acknowledgement of what they're saying without saying that this is a real or unreal issue. That becomes very delicate because you're right, you know. When somebody comes after you with hostility, some of those cells that we don't have from when we were 5 years old,
sure.
Well, some of those cells react,
yes.
Even though we don't have them. They're still reacting in defensiveness because we have a built-in mechanism of some sort that always says defend yourself when you're attacked.
That's right. I was a children and family counselor in the Department of Foster Care. This is many years ago in the state of Florida. And, you know, I would make recommendations to the judge. One time I recommended to keep a child in foster care. And the father came into my office. He was irate. He was very hostile. And so I could have shouted at him. I could have threatened him. I could have called the police like that. And so I used these skills to the best of my ability. And it was directed towards me. I said, I can see you hate my guts. You're furious with me. You're enraged with me. You can't believe I recommended to the judge to keep your child in foster care. And then actually he got even more angry. And I continued. I did 3 or 4 reflections matching his intensity. And while he never came to actually like me, but after 3 or 4 reflections where I understood his fury with me, he was calm enough, his anger was diffused enough to sit down with me, and we had a civilized dialogue about how to get his child returned to him, which was the goal that we both wanted. So it's just one
example. Yeah, but you know, David, you're a nice man, and you're the kind of man that somebody looks at. In my few conversations with you and what I read in your book, you're the kind of man that anybody would melt with, you know? You have a meltometer. You have a way of getting people diffused because you've got a calm place inside your heart. And this calm place is radiant. It's very hard when you have that calm, radiant place, which automatically puts people at ease, to teach people how to be that, because yours is the result of your years and years of work on yourself. So you're just teaching people, okay, here's what you do. But if you don't have that center behind it, if you don't have that calmness behind it, it really becomes kind of a get-nip. Get-nip is a phrase that my friend made up, which means good in theory, not in practice.
Okay, right.
So you got to be in there somewhat. But I do want to ask you, when a couple is arguing, and when they're forgetting about love, and they're in this economy, and they're thinking that, by the way, I want to mention your book, by the way, Relationships That Work, The Power of Conscious Living. And for those of you who believe you want to strive towards conscious living, this may be the way to go. It's about transformative communication. It's by David B. Wolf, who is a family healer, therapist, consultant, leader, coach, and all the other things. Okay, so David, one thing, two people look at each other, they're scared. Right. You know, a woman looks at her husband and she says, honey, I heard the stock market fell 1,000 points today. Our 401k must be suffering. Can you tell me the truth? I'm terrified.
Yes.
The man is afraid to feed her terror.
Right.
He doesn't know. He's in a double bind. He's in a conundrum. What does he say to her? What does he say?
He wants to be truthful. He doesn't want to be deceptive. At the same time, he's scared of the disturbance it will cause for the whole household. So he's feeling caught.
And he's also worried himself by the state of the economy. So you just gave me the answer. You just showed me, and that's exactly what you would say to me. If I were coming at you that way, you would tell me all those things, wouldn't you?
Mm-hmm. Which things do you mean?
You would say to me,
yeah,
I understand that I'm reluctant to tell you exactly what's going on because I'm afraid that your reaction might become kind of an overreaction, and I'm a little worried myself, but I want to be able to settle this with you in some kind of a calm place.
Nice, and just the way you expressed that, Armand, showed a very, very smooth, effective communication. You used I statements. That's another key communication principle.
Oh, yeah. Using the word you is sometimes when people are talking to each other and you actually, if you're just observing it like a family therapist, you hear this kind of you thing, and it's like so many yous. One wonders. If you could substitute the word I for every 10 U's, we'd already have insight.
Insight and a lot more peace, because just like in that domestic scenario you just described, you said, I'm reluctant to share with you. I'm concerned, too. I want to work this out. That's different than if you say, you're getting hysterical, and you're not going to understand anything. And then naturally, you know, she would tend to become defensive, and the whole tensions would escalate.
So I could see how you, David, if you and I lived together, we'd get along very well.
It could be.
But if we had most people who can become very emotional at times, especially when they feel threatened, most people don't know how to handle it. They just don't know. And if you're gonna give me in the last 5 minutes here some essential advice for finding your center. What do you say? Breathing, is it? Breathing, is it? Tapping your toes. Yesterday we had somebody tapping your face.
Really?
Trying to find. She said, you know, you got to go to the tap points on your face, and you'll find that by tapping your different points on your face, you bring a center to yourself. What's your way, David? What do you think?
Okay, well, it is very important that we're connected with our center. I personally, for more than 25 years, I've done a sort of mantra meditation that's really helpful for me. And that's described in Relationships That Work, The Power of Conscious Living. Also, in our relationships, to to cultivate, to build a culture of understanding, a culture of true dialogue. I distinguish dialogue from monologue. A dialogue is where I'm not going to speak until you confirm that I've understood fully what you've said, then I speak and you're fully present for me. And in that culture of true dialogue, then we support each other in coming to our center. We support each other to living from the core and essence of who we are. And techniques, strategies, and principles to do that we've talked about it the past 20 minutes, and I've described a lot more depth in relationships that work.
Yeah. So among your key, you say that there's a mantra that you say, and there's a mantra that you practice with yourself every day?
That's a spiritual practice that I do, along with spiritual reading.
Can you tell us what the mantra is, or is it a secret?
It's not a secret. It's the Maha Mantra.
And how does it go?
The Maha Mantra is Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
And you say that to yourself, and at the same time you try to find your breath taking you inward to this deeply centered place.
Yes,
and with that place you find it. Hey, are you married, by the way?
I am. I've been married about 22 years. We have two children, both teenagers.
Let me ask you, how does effective communication work with teenagers?
Well, the principles are the same. I'm not going to say there's not challenges. At the same time, actually, I've been quite inspired by both of my teenagers, because they're all these techniques from my books and seminars. They're using it on me, and sometimes it seems that they're more adept than myself, because I think they've sort of grown up in this environment.
You know, I think you make a very good point there, because it is something that if teenagers had the skills, that they would be able to communicate better with their parents, because it always seems to be a battle. Very quickly, we have about 2 minutes. What are grungies and payoffs?
Grungies, okay. Well, let's say any emotion that's like unpleasant, that is not authentic to our highest self. So all emotions have their healthy place. Like if someone dear to me passes away and then the next day I feel sad, well, that's natural. But let's say if 10 years later I'm so grief-stricken that I'm completely dysfunctional because I'm so sad, well, that's not healthy. So sadness or fear or confusion, anger, that's not kind of healthy. We're calling that a grungy. And a payoff, that whenever there's a grungy, like a recurring complaint we don't do something about, there must be a payoff. Why are we keeping it? Why are we holding on to it if it's not natural to the self? And so it could be maybe some people, they hold on to depression to get attention. Or maybe they hold on to confusion to avoid taking risks and going forward in life. And so in our transformative communication, we do a lot of work in identifying the payoffs for unhealthy, dysfunctional, emotional states.
Oh, very important. You're like, what are you getting out of it? You know,
exactly.
What do you
get
out of this behavior?
And
good.
By being aware of that, then we can make different choices. Hey, instead of holding on to this guilt in order to feel like a good person, I'm going to drop this guilt and I'm going to actually take responsibility to improve my character and improve my behavior.
David, thank you so much for being with us. David B. Wolf, name of the book, Relationships That Work. Thanks so much for your help.
Thank you, Armand.
Right. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk about how important it is that we do communicate, and I'll do that with song. And then we'll be taking your calls today at 212-209-2900. I do want to speak to you about your relationship communication today. We'll be right back. At Sometimes, My Friend, Songs of the Siren, The Irresistible Voices. You know, it's sometimes, like sometimes when we touch, the intensity is too much. Our telephone number here is 212-209-2900. We're taking calls today. We're taking calls about the attempts that you've made at communicating your, in your relationship and where you run into problems. And I would love to show some of you how and where the problem lies. You're going to see it. I mean, you're going to see it if you call in. And just be brave, be with me, because it's not easy. I mean, there are so many different ways that people make mistakes. Like, one of the most common mistakes that people make when they are trying to communicate is they try to say, I feel this way now, and then they bring in examples from the past. Now, bringing in an example from the past, you know, like, you remember last year you said this, or it's a funny thing the way the mind works. You know, sometimes the mind gets so lazy that it reshapes your memory to serve your purpose. So you could actually go back in time and say, you said that you would buy me or get us do this by now. And it may not have been that way. That wasn't the exact conversation. If you could rewind the tape recorder, you would hear it. You know, you would hear exactly how it is. So one thing I know for sure, never bring in the past. Unless, of course, you're angry about something that happened 5 minutes ago, because that is the past. But try not to bring in the past when you bring in arguments. Another thing not to do ever is never pathologize. Pathologizing is a funny thing. It's funny because, you know, you can imagine if you're not crazy and somebody calls you crazy, that, you know, you shouldn't respond to that. But there's a funny thing about when people psychoanalyze. And people tell you that, you know, you're reacting just like you did with your father. That stuff always rings this bell inside someone. And the bell it rings, you know, the response is kill. I must now kill you because you are invading my mind. So even though you may think by offering you some insight I could beat you into submission, right, and have you on your... What's the idea in an argument? What is it? We're going to argue so much that I will beat you into submission, and you're eventually, I will dismantle your mind, and I'll prove to you that you're just a neurotic nothing, and you will then look up at me from the floor, having turned into a bowl of jello, of just an emotional nothing, and you'll look up at me and say, I forgive, I'm sorry, please forgive me. Do you think that's what's going to happen? No. No, you're probably going to get hit with a pot on the side of the head. So it doesn't work. It doesn't work to try to beat somebody into submission. And you have to think about it in most of your arguments. What's the idea here? Old friend of mine used to say, conversations between couples are either constructive or destructive. He says, you know they're destructive if after 20 minutes of a conversation, the mood hasn't gotten better. That means you're meant to destroy. That means you two are doing nothing except making destruction. Construction is, you see that with each step of your conversation, you're actually getting better. So after 20 minutes, you feel better than you did 20 minutes ago in the conversation. Are they constructive or are they destructive conversations? Some people have arguments because they want to have a fight for no reason. Do you ever get in that mood? You're just in the mood to fight. So you bait your partner baits you back, you bait them back, then you have a fight, then you raise your voice, and then you do the you. You, and you never say the word I. And at the end of this time, the two of you are slamming doors on each other and walking out of the room, and what did it get you? Well, sometimes it feels good. Sometimes there is a thing that gets triggered by an argument that actually is like an endorphin. It feels good. So sometimes people fight just for the sake of getting release. If you listen to my family, if you were a kid, and you listen to my southern Italian part of my family, they used to scream at each other all the time. And I used to wonder, why are they doing it? And it would like, they would yell at each other and yell at each other and yell at each other, and then they'd laugh. And what do they, how did they laugh? It sounded so terrible to me as a kid. So it turns out that sometimes people are fighting for the sake of fighting, in which case I'm saying if you're fighting for the sake of fighting, you may as well be making love, because it's similar energy. Have a passionate exchange, or have a food fight. It's all kind of the same, because the words don't make a difference. I've developed what I believe, or I've observed, a series of words I call palabres. Palabres is a language. The language of palabres is a language that makes no sense. It's accusatory. It's just what you say to the other person, so the other person says something back to you, and it goes nowhere, my friends, nowhere. So what do I do for a living? I'm a palabres translator. You know, I translate. I have people come to me, they sit down, they look at each other, and I say, so who's wrong? Right? That's the beginning of it, because that's usually why people come to see me, because they want to prove to me that the other person is wrong. 212-209-2900. I'll give you more of these tips. Let's take one of your calls. Hi, this is Armand DeMille. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm just fishing around for where to start. I thought I would just do a little bit of role-playing and pretend you're my 8.5-year-old granddaughter.
Tough stuff.
You don't want to do that?
No, not that I don't want to do it. Okay. I applaud your attempt at it. Go ahead, do it. Do it.
Okay.
Let's hear it.
And I'm visiting you on my birthday, because I get to visit you only in your room. And my next scheduled visit is Friday for my birthday.
Now, wait. Wait, I have to understand this. Your daughter and son limit the amount of time that you're allowed to spend with your grandchild.
That's right. I called before about this. But this time, I lost a cat 2 weeks ago. I'm in mourning for this beautiful cat. And my granddaughter has not called me one single time to say, how are you doing, Grandma?
Okay, so what's going on?
And I called her a few times and been very tactful about how I talk.
I understand.
To her. Okay, now I'm going to say, Juliana, I'm so glad to be seeing you for my birthday. I love you so much. And you know how sad I am about losing Hammy. I was waiting for your calls and I didn't get any calls from you. And I felt so disappointed that you didn't call me or I don't know if I should say disappointed. And then I want to put it to her, why didn't you call?
Well, what's going on between you and your children? I mean, obviously your daughter and son are alienated from you if they're portioning out your visits with your grandchild.
Yes, especially the daughter. The son is just sort of like a sidekick.
Is this your son or your daughter?
It's my daughter, and he's doing a sidekick role.
Okay, see, your daughter and you have not worked out your stuff.
No.
So why don't you do that? Why don't you work it out?
Well, she won't talk to me.
She won't talk to you at all.
She's abusive, and she thinks when I just start to cry or something, she considers that abuse.
Okay, so now we have to, let's start at the top.
Yes.
You cannot afford in today's world at your age in this economy to have a non-talking daughter. So you must not talk about how to talk to your granddaughter, but how to talk to your daughter.
Well, for so many years I've been begging that woman.
And well, begging may not be the way to do it. There just may be a way. There has to be a way.
But otherwise, she wouldn't listen to me at all.
Well, you see, because the way you do it is you keep trying to use guilt as the way that she would do it. And
but if I talk straight to her, she hangs up.
No, I understand. So how about we send a note? You say, listen, I have this. I would like to make an appointment to see Armand DeMille with you.
Oh, no, she wouldn't see anybody. I begged her for 30
Rick,
years.
You know, you're giving me one of those oh-no's very fast.
But really, she has consistently refused to see people.
Yeah. Yeah. It's you got to find a way to make it at work between you and her.
I would love to do that. I would love to do that, but, you know, it's just how many...
What's your daughter's favorite pie?
Sweet potato.
When did you last make her a sweet potato
pie? Never. I don't cook. And she's got a lot of money, and she cooks, and they go out, and they go to France. And
how about you go somewhere, and you get her the best sweet potato pie in the world? You go to some fancy place.
I just
want
to push it in her face, I swear. She's
I know,
so
you
mean.
See? You
she's
see, but
so
I'm telling
mean.
You, if you do what you've always done, you're going to get what you've always got. So we got to do something different.
But I haven't always
okay,
done
now, wait
that,
a minute. So far, everything I'm saying, you say, but's like you.
All right.
All right? So, listen, it's nice talking to you. Here's what I'm saying to you. What's your name, by the way?
Ann.
Ann, get a sweet potato pie. Very good around this season. Get the best one made. Go get a great one. Don't get a good one. Go to some of the city's finest bakers. They can't be that expensive. Get this pie, wrap it up, bring it to her, and just put the word peace on it. Don't say another word. Just say peace. Don't, no guilt, no shame, no anything. Do that first. You'd be amazed what a sweet potato pie can do. You'd be amazed. It has the power.
Well,
if that doesn't work, get another one and throw it at her. Nice to talk to you.
I have to find her first. I haven't seen her for 10 months.
Well, then how do you see the baby?
She's 8 and a half, and the brother, the husband has to leave work to come and babysit because they don't trust me alone with her.
I know, so then you go over the house, right?
Yeah.
So you leave the pie on, it can't be as tough as you say. You leave the pie on the table. That's it. But try to make the kid understand how bad you feel.
I'm saying, how can I throw it in her face if I don't see her?
Yeah, I understand. Yeah. That's later.
So
but
don't
make the kid feel bad. Listen, I got to go. Don't make the kid feel bad. Don't talk to the kid about how bad you feel. Go there and bring joy to the child so that the child looks at you and eventually says, oh, where's Grandma? I miss her so much because she's dying. But instead, the child says, hey, where's Grandma? She's fun.
I know.
Okay?
You're right. Okay.
Thank you. Get me a sweet potato pie, too.
Oh, dear.
Thank you.
I'll get you one, too.
Good. I want one.
Okay. Bye.
212-209-2900. I love pumpkin pie. I wait for this kind of year, so when people come around with those great organic pumpkin fillings, just what I need for my diet. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Michael G. Haskins must love pumpkin pie. He must be a pumpkin pie person. He's the engineer at WBAI. I think we should send him one also. 212-209-2900, Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes.
Hi, Armand. This is Nick.
Hello, Nick.
Hi, how are you today?
Good.
I was just calling about the dynamics of the relationship between my wife and I.
We
have made a lot of progress, and we have what's called these meetings of two, where I get to speak for 2 minutes. We actually put a clock on the table, and I speak in the eye context. This is how I feel, and then my wife, gets to do the same thing, so it's back and forth, and I found that beneficial because it gives me a sense of safety, whereas in the past I would just feel totally swallowed up by my wife's issues and feel responsible for them.
Well, that's an amazing tool, and be able to do it means that you've done a lot of work to get yourself under control. Is this part of like effective nonviolent communication or something? Where did you learn this tool?
There's a 12-step program called Chapter 9. It's Couples in Recovery.
Yes.
And I actually just started that a few months ago, and I was just observing, listening how other people were communicating with each other. I was like, wow, where I come from, it was the person that yelled the loudest, I was the most violent, was the person that got their points across. And now that I have 3 young kids, I don't want to express myself in that way.
Oh, Nick, I'm proud of you. It's a beautiful thing.
Thank you. I just have one issue, and that is that when our son was about to be born, it wasn't something that we planned. And I must confess, I was kind of the thought process that, you know what, I would say to my wife now, in 25 years' time, we'll be ready to have a kid. God will say we're ready, but I guess the universe said otherwise. And in the process, I just totally shut down. I wasn't there for my wife. I just totally shut down, even through the birthing process. I mean, I was there physically so much. And since that time, she's had a real strong resentment towards me. And I will say that you know, part of the issue for me was, and it's shaming for me to talk about it, was that I wanted to put the issue of abortion on the table. And that was a no-go, but I said everything but that. And, you know, we've had conversations since where I've owned up to what I wanted to put on the table. And she has talked about it, and I said, look, I welcome every time you speak about it. But there's, and maybe it's because I'm uncomfortable dealing with her feelings, but there's this block that has definitely happened since that time between she and I.
You know, Nick, that's, you talk about something very familiar to me, about men who have, during a stressful time in their lives, abandoned their wives at that time, not only because you wanted abortion on the table, but maybe also because you wanted someone to be your mother and not to share motherhood. Things happen. You know, things happen. And getting over this sometimes requires having a third person in the middle. And as I was thinking about it, just thinking about what you said and how close you are to effective communication, there's a man I know whose name is Nick Stern, conveniently enough. And Nick Stern does this very effective communications. We're trying to deal with items like this that you just can't seem to get through. So you get an outside help for it. It would be really helpful, not expensive, and a good thing for the two of you. It'll unite the two of you, and you're already so long, you're so far along the way, you know? So I'm really proud of you, and you could, I know you could reach Nick by calling my office at 212-757-4488. It's a recommendation.
Well, and I think really it's, I really appreciate the suggestion, and I'm very much open to what you say. You've affected me in a profound way since I started to listen to you.
How many years have you been listening?
I must confess, it's about 6 months. But in that time, and I know you've been off the air because of the
fun drive.
But in that time, I mean, because I've gone on your website and I've, you know, printed up some of the stuff about addiction, and it has really opened me up in a way that I was kind of tunnel vision about stuff.
Yeah.
And just in the manner and your capacity and the gift that you have to kind of get to the issue is like, I don't know, but it's like, it's something that I can trust, and that's been a big issue for me. It's
sure.
The issue of trust. And you talked about the mother issue. You know, when I was 2, I was put into the foster care system, and I lived with so many different families. It was horrendous. So I've always had, you know, issues of trust, and I think maybe I recreate that in some level.
Well, that's kind of pointed to what I sensed about you, you see. I sensed that you being married said, in a way, I never had a real mommy, and you're going to be as close to his mommy as anybody could come. And then you get, your wife gets pregnant, and you say, wait a minute, I don't want to share mommy, you know. And on an unconscious level, without even knowing it, you know. I'm sure you're a beautiful man, Nick. Keep with your work. You're doing fine for yourself, and I'm proud of you for what you're doing. Great.
Thank you so much, and I really appreciate your work, and I will definitely call your office.
Great. Thank you. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. We got time for one more call. Hi there. You're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
Hi, Armand. This is Asien.
Hi, Asien. Asien?
Yeah.
Hi there.
I'm from another country, and I'm in a relationship for 8 years, and sometimes he gets upset because he doesn't understand me, so because of my accent.
Really, because of your accent, you seem to plead. Is he somebody who's from your country?
No, he's from here.
And where are you from?
From the Dominican Republic.
And he doesn't understand you because of your accent. So do you actually change your language at times when you are when you're upset? Do you speak Spanish or something?
No, I mix it up, and sometimes I don't pronounce words right.
And he criticizes you for not pronouncing words right?
The other day he got so upset about that, and he just put the radio on, and he just said, let's listen to the radio, and we didn't talk for a little bit.
Oh, I see, and I feel so sad for you, because it's not about your accent. You speak perfectly fine. you know, and anybody who lives with anybody who's got a Spanish background, you eventually learn what the word carajo means, you know, you get to, you know, you get to it. You get
well,
to,
we don't live together. We live separately.
Yeah.
But we've been in a relationship for 8 years.
So, you know, sometimes men, they just don't know how to handle somebody being upset. And the only way they do it is they try to beat you into submission. And he's trying to beat you into submission. He's trying to get you to be submissive so you could, you know, and ignore you. And I think you have to, you know, I hate to say it, but one of the good ways is for you to find some place where you can be heard and you could express yourself other than trying to bring everything to him so that you could find clarity inside your heart. He just sounds like he's somebody who just doesn't have any idea of what it's like to really love someone else.
Do you know a place where I can go?
Sure, call my office. We'll find you a place, okay?
Thank you, Armand.
Sure. The website.
You are great.
So are you, Asien. Thank you.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So, it's the positivemind.com is the website. I've got to be going. I will be back with you tomorrow at 2 p.m. and I hope, well, 1 p.m. and I hope I can take more calls at that time. I'm going to try to focus more on your needs, my friends. Back with you tomorrow at 1. This is Armand DeMille.